farms that they've built that have just metastasized in terms of the number of tanks necessary to handle that contaminated water.
Yeah.
The impossibility of managing that accident is the ultimate caution to those of us here in the East who look at 40-plus-year-old nuclear plants that people say are just fine and dandy, just like TEPCO, the Japanese utility, said that Fukushima could withstand any incident, and that was up on their website over a year after Fukushima went down.
Wow. Wow. Now, I had a guest on that went to Tokyo and did some soil samples in the northern suburbs of Tokyo, just people's gardens, you know, and brought it back and sent it sent it off to be analyzed, and the which I can't remember what extension, co-op group, whatever it was, wouldn't send it back to them because it's too contaminated. So we're not going to turn it loose. Wow. Fukushima is a disaster that's ongoing and has been now for ridiculous. 2011, was that when that was? Something like that. Anyway, I want to wrap it up. Anything else on Riverkeeper we should know about before we let you go?
I'll say this. There's been a couple of cases, fracking the most prominent of them, that shows the value and the clout that the grassroots has when they're intelligent, when they're thoughtful, when they're dedicated, when they stay the course. You can win environmental battles even in a hostile environment such as we have for the most part here in New York in 2015. So those of you who are out there fighting as volunteers or fighting as part of neighborhood associations, you can win.
Yeah.
I see it happen all the time.
Now, were you able to quantify the impact on the Hudson of if the fracking would have been turned loose?
It wasn't the Hudson so much as the New York City watershed. And even after they said they wouldn't do it in the New York City watershed, there's just too many issues associated with air transport of pollutants and damage to the rest of the state's rivers, lakes, and streams. We had to go all in on fracking, and we were proud we did.
Yeah, yeah. All righty, it's the top of the hour. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. We have been speaking with Paul Gallet at Riverkeepers and riverkeeper.org. And Paul, I want to thank you again for being on. I want you to have the last word. Anything else you want to throw in? Here's your shot.
You know, Jim, I'll say it again. It's that important. This is a movement that succeeds when the grassroots drives the train, when the grassroots is going to their local officials and saying, this isn't good enough, and we need you to pay more attention to our infrastructure. We need you to do environmental enforcement. We need you to keep bad energy out of our community, and we need you to give us rivers, lakes, and streams that are fishable, swimmable, and drinkable.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That's the final word from Paul Gallet, president of Riverkeeper. And you're based in what city again?
We're based in Ossining.
You're in Ossining. Okay. Very good.
Westchester.
Westchester County. Northwestchester.
www.riverkeeper.org.
Riverkeeper.org. Super. Thank you so much. We'll have you on down the road again, but I just wanted to get an update.
Okay. Good deal, Jim.
Thank you, Paul. Take care.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That scene. sun go down.
Come watch the sun go down.
Hear the sea rolling.
Listen to the sea rolling.
But I'll be thinking of you.
Yes, and I'll be thinking of you.
And how it might have been.
Thinking how it might have been.
Hear the nine birds
cry. Listen
to the nine birds cry. Watch the sunset down. But it had to end this way, with all the game we played.
Well, I hope you understand, I just had to go back to the island.
And watch the sun go down.
Watch the sun go down.
Social Security, let's lay it to rest once and for all. I told you never would I do such a thing. But I tell you also now, Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. Social Security is totally funded by the payroll tax levied on employer and employee. If you reduce the outgo of Social Security, that money would not go into the general fund to reduce a deficit. It would go into the Social Security Trust Fund. So Social Security has nothing to do with balancing a budget or erasing or lowering the deficit.
Hello, this is Alec Baldwin. There are lots of ways to show you have style. Wearing fur isn't one of them. Each year, millions of animals are drowned or beaten to death in the wild, or gassed or electrocuted in captivity for their coats. Cruelty is one fashion statement we can do without. Please help the animals by joining People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Write PETA, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510. Thank you.
Okay, we are back on, and I got a call from Nat again. Nice chat. He's appalled by the Indian Point situation, as we all should be. And it does loop back around to the comments I made at the beginning of the program relative to standing up and saying not no but hell no to what's going on in our society. This is societal injustice under that big tent we talked about in a different manner, but you're endangering millions of New Yorkers, and if the wind's going the other way, maybe some Jersey folks, when not if, this thing finally falls apart. And it's got to get shut down and shut down properly. we will be readdressing the Fukushima catastrophe again, and get back to interviewing some of the folks on the West Coast that have been monitoring the impact on the Pacific coastline since Fukushima began. It is a ongoing meltdown, and every containment pool that they keep building, eventually all of Japan will be a containment pool. I mean, come on, they're not going to do that, are they? So it's just going to do what they're already doing also, is dumping it into the ocean. And we're fortunate to be on a planet that has a huge amount of water, but using it as our toxic dump is not going to be a sustainable situation, as our fishing supplies already are contaminated, and on. Okay, let's shift gears. So we will revisit two things based on what we just talked about. One, we'll hear from the Peconic Riverkeeper Group, and not next week, but maybe the week after we can get them on. And the second is Fukushima, to give an update on that. And I'm sure the numbers are going to be disheartening, but and they're not busy being an empire. They're not busy carrying on wars. I don't know why their national treasure isn't being spent on protecting the rest of the planet from this disaster they had. But so you can wag your finger at other countries besides the United States of America. But as Paul pointed out with his statistics, our priorities are so out of whack now, and our funding so insane and ideologically driven, that it's time to stand up. And it's, again, time for you to get off your fanny and help us out. And get with Credo, C-R-E-D-O. Go to Credo. Credo will, you get on that email list, you'll have two or three petitions a day that you sign. Well, you sign it electronically, and it's simple as heck. And click, click, boom, gone. It takes you no time at all. You're going through your emails anyway. And I've signed countless petitions that Credo has done, and other groups. Daily Kos has one that uses the same technology, the same engine, if you will, on the internet. It makes it so simple. So if you're homebound and you can't get out and you can't protest, you're homebound, then please do that on online, or if you don't have a computer, go the traditional route of writing letters. They do have to count those. I don't know how Zeldin is doing. We used to meet with Bishop. That was, what a farce that was. But I stopped doing it. I just refused to meet with that idiot anymore. But I don't know about how it is with Zeldin. But up in Albany, you can go up there. You can take bus trips up on different causes and raise hell up there, raise hell down in Washington. You can march. You can do all kinds of things. So I'm going to be kind of on this, as you can tell here, as we work our way into spring and summer. If it's a little too chilly out there to stand on a snowbank, I understand, but please find other ways to stand up against the madness that is going on. Let's kind of get into, because a lot of what we're talking about with the madness is the economy, right? Excuse me. It's the economy, stupid, as they used to say. So we're going to listen to historian Gal Alperovitz, and he has got some excellent items to share here. We're going to do more from Gar Alperovitz later.
As the corporate capitalist system decays, there's growing pain at one level of ordinary experience, but there's also growing sense that the welfare state or the social democratic strategies are basically over. Then we could go into an analysis why that is, decline of labor, globalization, etc., in this country, race issues. But unlike a collapse, which might have produced a crisis political shift, maybe to the right, maybe to the left, the stagnation and decay and pain is forcing people either to innovate or things get worse. There's no solution from the state. So what we're seeing is three levels. One, there are many, many projects, very practical. I can describe some of those. There's also an explosion of ideas, people thinking through, what does this all mean? Where does it go? And there's new activism around this. I would say the prehistory of a big movement is happening. We're not yet at a place where there's an extraordinary political movement. It's the preamble to that, the preliminary questions. So, examples. The most pressing, the most interesting example is the work in Cleveland, which people have heard about, Evergreen, it's called. It's a very poor neighborhood, 40,000 people, almost entirely black. Average income maybe 20,000 a year, which is very low. Unemployment rate of maybe 40%, very high. It's a very painful black community. So in that community is a series of worker-owned cooperatives connected by a nonprofit corporation. So not just for the workers, but to build the community is the concept. And they're large, they're rather large. One of them is the largest, I think, yes, the largest greenhouse in any urban area in the United States. So it produces 3 million heads of lettuce a year. It's very significant. These are not little co-ops. People often think of co-ops as only small. Another one is an industrial scale laundry, maybe the greenest laundry in that part of the country, a third of the water, a third of the heat, etc. For hospitals and universities, it's a large industrial scale. And then there's a solar installation company, all cooperatives. But what makes it unique is this connection with the community, so some of the profits go to the community, not just to the workers, and also to start new ones in the same structure. On top of that, in this area are universities and hospitals, very big ones. One of the biggest in the world, the Cleveland Clinic is there, and Case Western Reserve University, University Hospital. They buy $3 billion, with a B, in goods and services every year. Now, that's in addition to salaries, in addition to construction, just what they buy. None of it from this area. So this group has been able, we've been helping them use some of these purchases, a lot of it from public money for healthcare and education for universities, use these purchases to help stabilize, instead of big corporations, a structure that is cooperative, complex, community building, and green, and trying to use this process to recirculate it and build an entirely different structure. Radically decentralized, but also aware of how to deal with the market. In this sense, it's like a planning system because you're using quasi-public purchasing. So that's so-called Cleveland model. It's become a model that many parts of the country people are trying to replicate. It's very interesting because once, as we were talking earlier, you get a model, many, many people begin to say, well, you can do something. They don't realize that you can do something until somebody does it. And then many, there's Atlanta, Georgia is doing this. There's one in the Washington, D.C. area, one in Jacksonville, Florida is beginning to explore it. Jackson, Mississippi, Denver, many parts of the country, Pittsburgh, are beginning to explore developing this kind of problem, this kind of solution, because they can't solve it the old way. The old social democratic welfare state doesn't work. And there is no other solution. The market doesn't work. So the pain gets worse. But there's no crisis. So out of that process, people are just beginning to say, you know, we can do something ourselves, and then begin to use the state and use other resources in this way to build a different structure. Now, it's very participatory, very green, very community-oriented. It's not the top-down state socialism. It's not the welfare state with corporations and the social democratic structures. It's an attempt to rebuild a different vision, but very practical. Absolutely practical. What we've discovered, and our group has been involved in helping this, is that in local communities, this, which is worker ownership of the means of production, very radical, but it's very practical, and it's not state, like the Soviet state. So we find even people who think of themselves as conservatives, they think of themselves, because they believe in individual hard work, they see people working hard, they see local structure, they see participation, they don't see a big state. So they find it very positive, not negative. Nationally, in the United States, we have a debate, an ideological debate. But locally, it's very different, because it has to be, but I think the key is it has to be very practical. And once it's practical, we find very, very strong interest. You can, and if we have time, we can talk about the historic roots of these kinds of ideas and anarcho-communal theory. And there's many different traces that you can take it back, or we talked about John Dewey. But more important today is that it meets a need and it resonates with a democratic spirit as well as practical need. So that would be an example. There are many other things like that happening in the United States now, out of this context of pain, out of the difficulties.
Well, if things could talk, and I'm sure you'd hear a lot of things to make you cry, my dear. Ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad?
Oh, ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad?
Glad, glad that things don't talk.
Our shoes could tell where they've been. Say you've been visiting a friend. Ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad?
Yeah, hey, hey. Ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad?
Mm-hmm. But ain't you glad?
Glad that shoes don't talk.
Time knows to tell who's turning knob when he's away out on his job. And calls to tell who's been inside.
This is Montel Williams for the Humane Society of the United States. They're playful and affectionate, aloof and mysterious. They're also the most frequent occupants of America's animal shelters, where millions end up each year. They're cats, America's most popular pets, but also the pet most likely to die prematurely from disease, poison, animal abuse, and collision with vehicles because many people let their cats roam freely. To protect your cats from harm, please keep them indoors. A safe cat is a happy cat.
This is odd. America's laws to deter corporate crime actually force victims to help subsidize the criminals. Follow the bouncing ball here. First, a court orders a corporation to pay punitive damages to a victim of its criminal acts. Second, The corporate offender pays up, then merely subtracts a big chunk of that payment from its income tax, effectively taking money out of our public treasury. Third, while the criminal is counting its tax break, the victim is notified that the punitive damage money he or she received from the corporation will be taxed as regular income. Fourth, that means a big chunk of the victim's payment actually goes to replenish the public money the corporate villain subtracted. Bad enough that corporate finance lawmakers legalize such encouragement of criminality, but corporate coddling judges are playing the same disgraceful game by drastically reducing the amounts that juries order corporations to pay. In a Montana case, for example, a jury awarded $240 million in punitive damages to the families of three people, including two teenagers, killed in a car crash. The deaths were blamed on a steering defect that South Korean automaker Hyundai was found to have known about and recklessly ignored for more than a decade. But a district judge has since supplanted the jury's ruling with her own, while declaring that Hyundai's, quote, reprehensibility certainly warrants a sizable punishment. She cut the corporation's punitive payment down to $73 million. Hello, that's not punishment to a $79 billion a year car giant. It's pocket change. Why would Hyundai executives quit putting corporate profits over people's lives if that's their, quote, punishment? This is Jim Hightower saying, with subsidies and wrist slaps, the corporate criminal whirligig will continue to spin, making a mockery of justice.
And I want to say this to the television audience. I made my mistakes, but in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent. And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination, because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
Did you know there's a child care center right here on campus? Stony Brook Child Care Services, a nationally accredited center, non-for-profit organization, offers programs for children 2 months to 5 years of age, with caring and professional early childhood teachers and a sliding fee scale. For more information, please call 631-632-6930 or visit us at www.sunysb.edu/childcare.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Okay, we are back. We're going to wrap it up. We have our folks here for the next program, Taking Care of Yourself. So they're going to have no guests today, just a duet. All right. Well, they always have some excellent material for you, so stay tuned for that. At 3 o'clock, we go to a music format, and then Long Island's own Amy Goodman kicks in at 5 o'clock. Thanks to Paul Gallet from riverkeeper.org. Help out with the Hudson, help out with the New York watershed, help out with stopping Indian Point, help out with putting the feet to the fire for General Electric to clean up the Hudson. All of those good causes. And the good news of today was hearing that there's a Peconic group affiliated with them. So we will have them on in a couple weeks for the Peconic Riverkeeper group and hear what's going on right here in our backyard. But the Hudson is an incredibly important waterway for commerce and recreation. I did mention the walkway over the Pacific. That'd be a hell of a walkway. Walkway over the Hudson, which we did this summer, and it was this fall, and it was just gorgeous. So that's right by the Poughkeepsie train station there. Can't miss it, and take advantage of that. You get right in the middle of the river, very high up. It's a bit of a hike, but it's fun. So beautiful. There's a lot to do up river besides see your friends at Sing Sing, right? Anyway, we got to wrap it up. It's been one of those where I've maybe gone a little too strong on standing up to injustice, standing up to war. But I think we're at the point now where, particularly with the statistics that Paul Gallet had about the underfunding of any form of regulation of the nuclear industry, of the Clean Water Act, all of that is finally hitting home as our national treasure is diverted to the Middle East in the form of bombs and other unrest. It's time to stand up, whatever side you're on. But again, social justice is a broader tent than just anti-war. So we ask you to join the North Country Peace Group. Saturday's 11 o'clock at Bennett's Path, North Country Road, and 25A. One signal east of Nichols Road. All right, I'll see everyone again on Monday, I think. If not, you will have more all the way through. If not, we'll just I'll have him on for part of the program. So that's 11 a.m. on Monday. So take care of yourself. I'll see everybody next week. Bye.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. Thanks, Jim. Welcome to Taking Care of Yourself.
Thank you, Jim.
Today we don't have a guest, so it's you and I talking
yes,
about...
Yes, and I'm not going to sing either, so okay. Have no fear if you're listening.
All right. So a couple of announcements. There's a big vigil for one of our students on Thursday at the Tabler...
Tabler, I believe it's Black Box Theater.
Black Box Theater at 7:30. All are welcome, and I hear that the student is very popular, so I'm pretty sure it'll be a good turnout. Mm-hmm. And the dean's office worked very hard and closely with student groups to get this off the ground to honor this person. So, all are welcome and come out to show your respects. There's a lot going on. The Vigil of Hope will be next.
That'll be taking place March 24th, Tuesday evening, 6 p.m., SAC, Student Activity Center Auditorium. I'm very pleased to say we have confirmation from several students who will be sharing their remarks, as well as Stephen Licardi, or Sven Licardi, who was a guest here last year when he published his first work. Thanks to the exposure on this program and the support of the university, he is honored to return and be our keynote speaker.
Whoa. So, all right, put that on your calendars, ladies and gentlemen. March 24th, the Vigil of Hope, and it's about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And you'll learn as time goes on. Look for flyers and posters and all. Mm-hmm. And where's that going to be held?
That is being held in the SAC Auditorium, Stony Brook Student Activity Center. And if you are coming from an off-campus location, you can park in the administrative parking lot and walk on over. We'll have students outside directing any off-campus guests. Invitations will be posted to anyone who has an interest in joining us or speaking at the event. Please contact me directly. At this time, we are finalizing our invitations to our guest speakers. Our students are inviting two more administrators to speak. We have yet to hear if they're going to accept the invitation. Mm-hmm. And several of our student groups have been invited to share a table, as well as the Memorial Fund for the student. We've allowed them to have a table during the vigil in the event that there is someone who wishes to contribute to a scholarship fund in her honor, in Catherine's honor.
Okay. So all these announcements and such are very important. And I know in between there's a semester break, so you should be very rested to come back and, mm-hmm. and start the second half of the semester. It's amazing with all the snow and everything. You wouldn't think that things are happening, but things are still happening.
I love the snow, Jerry.
Yeah, this is snow lady here, snowbird. She skis and she does all this winter stuff. I don't know. I'm waiting for the Robin Redbreast to come back. You know, we talk about the Vigil of Hope, and I think I remember last year we went through what was the genesis or the origin of this. I think it's worthwhile to state that once more.
Certainly, and thank you for the opportunity to share an update with our audience. In 2010, we had a graduate student, Daniel, who was also a guest on our show a few years ago. Daniel Callahan, graduate student, was hoping to find or identify a venue where students could gather to express and or feel a sense of hope in a time where perhaps they were feeling hopeless. That is related to bullying incidences that had taken place. Matthew Shepard, who was beaten to death and left in a cornfield, as well as following, sadly, the completed suicide of Tyler Clemente, Rutgers University student, who was completed his suicide shortly after a time when he was betrayed by someone very close to him, his roommate, his college roommate, who had filmed him in a situation, a sexual encounter that was compromising at the time for him. And the sense of the students was that there needed to be a sense of hope when someone was feeling their most hopeless. And the goal of the event that was initiated by Daniel was to be some shining light for someone, no matter what their adversity was at the time, and to identify our campus as a place that does not tolerate intolerance.
That's very good. You know, suicide, in a way, I don't mean to sound flip about it, but it's sort of out of the closet now. We speak the word because it's the only way that what we know how to deal with it is to face it and look at it and work out strategies and protocols so we can deal with it, to say suicide. And, you know, we talk about bystander activity and for students, watching out for students. And so, again, with this, with suicide or any other mental or physical health issue, and someone is depressed or and you see some change in behavior, if it's a buddy, you know, you have the, you know, you walk up and say, hey, buddy, what's going on? And, and at least you try, that kind of thing. Because these are important things. I mean, these things were under wraps for so long. And now with some of the treatments and really it starts with someone being referred or taken care of or listened to much of this stuff. I was looking at a program on Sunday. They were talking about the number of veterans coming from the Middle East and the number of veterans who have suicidal ideations. They may not complete a suicide, but some of the horrendous things they saw over in the during the war, and these young men and women come back injured, not just injured bodily, but, you know, psychologically as well. There was a young man on that program who did a really creative thing. He had these veterans stand in front of a mirror and look at themselves. And then he asked them, what did they see? And then there was a variety of responses to that question. Some of them saw a very strong and enlightened person coming back from the wars, and others were really, really down, and the mood was low. And he said, okay, I want you to dress up in the best clothes you have or any other outfit that you like or you've liked, you know, you liked along the way. So men and women, both, they didn't only dress up in lively clothing and outfits. They had their children or their parents stand next to them. And then this guy was a photographer. So he took pictures of them on the gay side, where they were looking really upbeat. And so, and he had them stand in their uniforms, and he took a picture with them in their uniforms, and he put the two pictures together, and it was like a reflection. He called it reflections, and it made a world of difference to, I don't know how many of these he did, at least 50 around the country. But this is another way that somebody intervened in the lives of someone who was not feeling okay at the time. And so here at Stony Brook, we're trying to do our best, trying to do the same in various ways. And some people say, it's corny, you're doing this stuff, what it's going to do? You'd be surprised when someone is really out of sorts, that a word or a hand or a referral or just sitting with them for a while or helping out will do.
Well, we've had students who have participated in our depression screenings, and we've asked them as a sign-off, if you will, after they complete our depression screenings, if they want to say anything or if they had any remarks. And the most often commented or remark that we hear from students is something along the lines of, somebody talked to me today. Wow. Or I hadn't realized I hadn't spoken to another person in several days, or someone noticed me. Someone took note of the fact that I might not be feeling well. Those are the kinds of comments that we receive on the depression screenings. And to jump off, if you will, from your comments about our beloved veterans here, we are also kicking off, after our Vigil of Hope, I believe the date for the start of this is April 1st. We are hosting, students are doing this. It's an event called SBU 22 in 22. And the event is for 22 days, different students, organizations, the students are organizing this, are raising funds to support Active Minds and the Wounded Warrior Project. And they are asking for 22 different groups to send a representative and do 22 push-ups. And the significance of the 22 is that every day in this country, 22 veterans, active and or retired, complete a suicide in this country. So we're reaching out a hand as best and effectively as possible through our students, who are students, and to honor our veterans in a way that's different. But imagine, if you will, how complex and how stressful coming to college is for that average 18-year-old who hasn't seen the world as vividly as some of our veterans. You come onto campus, you're 23, you're a little out of step to begin with, and then you're trying to fit in. And the stress of college. And it can be overwhelming. So we are linking students to resources. We're heightening awareness as best possible. And we are identifying Stony Brook as a very welcoming place for those who are seeking support. Support is available. But it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
For those caretakers out there who are used to holding up the world on their shoulders, receiving help, certainly asking for help, can be the most difficult thing they ever do.
You're telling me. I went to a dissertation defense a couple years ago, and the title was Using Emotional Labor. And that's what caretakers do beside their expertise in medicine or counseling or teaching the paradigms of health and mental health as health educators and social workers and psychologists. Psychiatrists do, nurses, they use emotional labor, and it's hard to count the hours and of emotional labor because you generally take that home with you. There's so many things we have to take home with us. Kate goes snowboarding, so
skiing. I love my skiing.
And so that's how, you know, and we tell people who go into this profession, you must do something to get away. And it's not wrong. And we come right back to it. And that's what keeps us going. So when we are, when you see RHDs, RAs, and campus residents, people in the dean's office, and they're behind closed doors, there's a lot going on. They're talking to students about a lot of things. Even looking at our career center, where people go to get help making the transition from college to the places of work. And those counselors there, they know about resumes. They know you may be anxious about what your resume looks like, and they're ready to help. And at the same time, give you a helping hand, give you a boost, and give you some encouragement to go to that interview that you might not go to.
It's sometimes difficult to identify that hope is a good thing. And there is hope here on this campus for those who are seeking it, but it is a hope of mine that those who don't realize they can actually relax for a moment and accept some help, find the help that they need. Jerry, I ski during the winter time anyway. What do you do to relax?
Well,
Doctor, heal thyself, or whatever that expression is.
Yeah, I've been off the track for a while, Kate, because my gym closed down and I used to go spinning. But we're going to re-up either here on campus or...
Just checking in, Jerry, making sure you're doing okay.
Yeah, and spin, and that's what we do. I was going spinning 2 or 3 times a week, and it's a great, great exercise, you know. And then
get those endorphins moving.
Oh man! And then when the weather's better, we go bike riding on the outside. So that's really even better than that, and then skiing. I mean, spinning inside. So
where it's warm.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. We're talking about, this is a crazy segue, but we're talking about doing physical things to make ourselves feel better. I was talking to a group of our athletes here at Stony Brook, and one or two of them, they had some complaints about being injured or hurt as they played the sports they love. I was talking to someone who is a basketball player, not so much as on the varsity team, but plays basketball, happened to be a female. And she plays out in her community, and she picks up some games on campus as well, I guess. And they take it very serious. And she couldn't play for a while. And boy, what that really did to her. You know, her buddies would go down to the court and play, and they play pickup games, or they have games that are organized and such with a league. You know, we have a very, very large intramural league here on campus. I mean, basketball, volleyball. I think we also do some of the paddleball and those kinds of sports as well. And so to be sort of left out and not be able to do so much of this stuff has to do not only with playing the sport, but being a part of a group that's playing the sport and being a part of a team, being part of a group of people. Many of our students come to campus from far and wide. I mean, from upstate New York, from many of the states, the 50 states, and they don't know people. And so this is one way to get to know folks. You know, we talk about the organized clubs, and we have about, 300 and so or more?
Over 300, yes.
Over 300 clubs. And the club for some of these students, for our students, it's a team or playing every week or weekend.
It's their family here because we know from listening to students, I ask this question in almost every class, especially the freshmen that I am working with, and I say, how many of you have come here with your best friend? How many of you are here with the person that you trust the most and talk to the most? And in all my years of asking that question, I've had maybe three students say or identify they came here with their best friend. And the rest of them are here, new experience, new stress, new expectations, and they're doing their best to reach out. So I can't imagine being an athlete identified for your physical abilities and then losing that ability and losing your friends and your team members as well. That is quite a challenge in this environment.
Yeah, it is. You know, we talk about some of the stress and being separated from the group, but very often and more than often, the groups are the lifeline. And they do reach out to their member in stress or in trouble. But, you know, we work in this dichotomous sort of way where, you know, there's the cult of individualism and there's the cult of teamwork and joining. And I think, and I'll be a little sexist about it, and the women will beat me up, that a lot of the men have it worse than the women in the sense that they have this thing about, I have to be autonomous and be on my own and such. You know, well, women will sit down and talk for the most part with another woman about something where guys have to keep it in. And that can be a little rough.
Well, we are in a society where, you know, man up is still quite an acceptable term. And even on the, well, I don't want to tear apart the Oscar show the other night, but it was pretty not good. You know, there were even comments about, you know, man up, you know, in the banter. And it's acceptable. So if you're in a situation and a female is crying, her friends are rushing over to comfort. If there's a young man crying, people are running away. And it's sad, but it's true, and it still exists.
I was thinking about that image of the folks are running away. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, they run away both physically and they run away psychologically.
They recoil.
Yes. What's the matter with you, man?
Right. What's up?
What's
suck it up.
Yeah, man up. And so this is a message to everyone, men and women, to go to the places where you know you can be comforted. And those who see people that need to be comforted, do that comforting, you know, and such. I mean, and you know, someone can be in stress due to so many different things. I mean, in a competitive place like a university in Stony Brook gets more competitive every year. That can happen. You're in your class and you are ace in your high school you ace everything. You come to Stony Brook, maybe, and you sit in one of the classes.
One of the masses here,
Yeah, and you get a B, and oh, my God, it's like failing, you know. It takes a while to adjust.
Well, it's also midterms time now. This is quite a stressful period of time for our freshmen, our first year, because they've had the bounce, if you will, of that first semester here and adjusting and grades and the shock of not getting that 4.0, perhaps, for so many of them. We have such academically high-achieving students here, and now it's midterm time, and this is the semester you have to pick it up.
Yeah.
So, again, I can't begin to imagine the stress, but I also can't begin to imagine what it's like in your field of work in the counseling center. Has it been busy or busier?
Oh, yes, it has. Mm-hmm. It really has. I mean, and it's at all levels. I mean, from freshmen through graduate students through HSC students as well.
Sure.
I mean, graduate students over there in the health sciences. Mm-hmm. And we know what that's like with all the exams and the clinicals and the rest of it. It can be really tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're being supervised. I'm talking about an HSC in many of the programs, which is good. I mean, supervision, you need that for licensure and to be good medical people and health providers and such. But there's evaluation all over the place. So, I mean, it's like, I guess it's like boot camp, getting ready for the real world.
Well, getting ready for the real world in many ways. In my experience, too, with students here, they are so giving and so caring, and they're not at all the self-centered as depicted on TV. But for many, that in and of itself is an issue, because it's hard to see that one of the most brave things that you will do will not necessarily be catching a friend before they fall. It's catching yourself before you fall. And the strength and just the sheer bravery an individual may need to find it within themselves to say, help, help me. If an individual is in that position of feeling the need for help, rest assured for your future, you will be better able to help somebody else in future. And that whole self-care is absolutely true. So I would urge any student who is struggling, please keep an eye out for your friends, but also get the care you need. It's available here. And with appreciation to our, well, my colleagues in CAPS, Counseling and Psychological Services. Jerry, supposing a student is listening now and identifies that they may wish to reach out for help. I know we have a depression screening tomorrow in the SAC kiosk. We have peer educators who are trained who will link those students with an identified need to a campus professional. But how does a student who maybe is not familiar with our depression screenings, how would a student connect with or find or get an appointment with our counseling center here at Stony Brook? What do they do?
Well, there are a number of ways, but I'll start with the most simple. Either walk to the counseling center. You know, we're located in the Student Health Service building on the second floor. And there's a lovely receptionist there, a number of lovely receptionists there that will greet you, and you can let that person know exactly why you're there. And then they will put you through some papers and that. And you may be able to see a counselor, if that's what you're asking for, that day. And you'll see a triage counselor, that's for sure. And they will sort out the issues or what you want to talk about and direct you into the right place. Either you'll see a counselor, or you'll see you'll be put on a list to go into a group or go into a group. Or, you know, they may be able to talk to you, that triage counselor, right there. And you'll realize that, you know, you have the wherewithal within yourself to solve this problem. Or refer you to, say, like the center, the, what's the name of the center? I just called it just a while ago when you're looking for jobs in the career center. Direct you to the career center if you need career advice, or direct you to advising center if you need academic advice. Direct you down the hall to Kate if you need advice about
health
counseling or peer work or peer counseling and how she goes about that. So we are, that's why we call it a center. It's a place to come. If you don't walk up and see someone right away, you make a call and they will make an appointment for you over the telephone. And that appointment is yours. And someone will call you and remind you of the date and the time. And then you will go through that same routine that I listed just a while ago, talked about just a while ago. And you are able to use this service as long as you are here at the school, either both undergraduate and graduate. We go through graduates.
And our graduates are cordially welcome, of course, at any time. But there's a parking issue here, and our graduate students with their complex academic schedules should be aware that the counseling center is open by appointment. Every Tuesday night, is it?
Yes.
For students for later night appointments, where not only is it perhaps easier with your academic schedules, but you can park right outside without worry of a ticket. But for those students who have a curiosity about the counseling center or want to find ways to de-stress, maybe they're not in a stressful situation right now, but they're feeling some anxiety about their midterms. So they hear about these mindfulness meditation drop-in groups. What's a student to do if they have an interest in that?
Well, the mindful, thanks, Kate, for mentioning that. The mindful meditation groups, they are being run every Wednesday up in the counseling center, CAPS, from 1 to 2 p.m. on Wednesdays. And you'll get a orientation into mindfulness. And that orientation is pretty solid because you will get exercises in terms of how to de-stress yourself by sitting, learning to sit. And we use the words like noticing what's going on with yourself. You know, you're in control. If you need more or want more, you can sign up for the 6-week, it's like a course, workshops in mindfulness, or the 8-week course in mindfulness. And they are run on Wednesdays and Thursdays as well. Those HSC students, there's someone there on Thursdays doing mindfulness meditation as well. So I know you won't be out of the loop, because even corporate giants and captains of industry are doing mindful meditation now.
It is or has been identified in current literature and publications as the number one way to live a healthier life.
Yes, it starts.
Take mindfulness into your life and into your heart and into your day-to-day life practice, and you will achieve a more joyful existence, I believe is how it was put. So.
Yeah, it's based on Buddhist principles, but it's not religious in the sense that there's no sectarian or dogma taught. It's very scientific in a way, because they have done experiments or studies on the brain of people who have sat mindfully for years, and that part of the brain has really grown. The part that notices and calculates. They've done that sort of thing down in years before. They call it mindfulness. The nuns who and the church who have a prayerful life or meditative life, they've done experiments with them as well. Not experience. I keep saying experiments. Studies.
Studies.
Yeah, we're not doing any Frankenstein kinds of work here.
Well, let's hope not with our precious nuns, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's another way. I mean, then we have an anxiety group where one of our nurse practitioners, Sandy Edwards, she runs a group for students who know they have anxiety, and they come into this group, and she talks about practical ways of relieving that anxiety, and they meet once a week.
And when you use the word anxiety, is that inclusive of an individual who may feel socially anxious?
Social anxiety is one. In fact, I think that's a group, social anxiety folks. Well, I tell you the truth. If you really boil it down, most of our anxieties are social. Because, I mean, when you can't do a paper or can't write an essay or get up in front of the class to speak, it's about evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
And who evaluates you? It's your peers and your professors. Mm-hmm. So it is a sort of interactive kind of thing, human to human. Mm-hmm. You don't mind if Fido hears Fido would sit there in your little cat mini or whatever. You can talk to them, all right? You know, in your tape and you can record yourself. But when there's another human being, it changes the dynamics altogether.
Judgment. Oh, please. Well, you and I have discussed at length our anxiety when speaking publicly. You've helped me out a number of times as I prepare to do some.
And she's
such
a great speaker,
thing.
Folks. And you
no,
see that,
no,
right?
No. Have no.
She has no fear.
Yes, I do. I'm getting nervous just even thinking about it. Yeah. But that said, the ability for an individual to address it, talk about it, find out everybody has this issue for the most part. I've met very few people who have not had some level of social anxiety, and they can all benefit from sharing their experiences with others and then receiving reinforcement that it is possible to overcome an issue that may be holding you back. Yeah. For instance, if I did not, well, I don't think I've overcome it, but I've certainly learned how to live with it. If I had not overcome my fear of public speaking, I would never have been able to become a teacher and work in a classroom. Never. Never mind dealing with a group of parents and moving forward and speaking about the things I do as a health educator in an audience filled of people who are going to judge me anyway for the content of the lecture. But certainly, there's nothing more comforting than support from an individual who has nothing to gain or lose by telling you you're doing well or you're addressing or identifying a situation effectively. And I can't encourage or promote enough the benefit of availing of the services here in our counseling center for everyone. I mean, I wish we had the staff available, but we do a pretty darn good job here of addressing the needs of our students and ensuring that a student in need will receive the support that they ask for or that is identified as a need.
It's very true.
Mm-hmm.
We said that social anxiety is one of the biggies. Another one is change.
Oh.
Change. And that's what we were talking about when we started the show, because freshmen coming from high school is a big change. And they anticipate. They anticipate what's going to be, that the worst is going to happen, once they get here. And that's another thing we talk about in the mindfulness workshops is that the default thoughts are always the negative thoughts. We go, that's our default mode. We go to the negative rather than saying, it's going to be okay. We say, oh my goodness, I can't do that. It's going to be terrible.
You couldn't be like that living in my house with my mother, who thinks if both of your legs have been chopped off, at least you have two arms. So
okay. All right, Mom. She's got
no negativity.
Good for her. Yeah. This is like a place where you can learn about yourself. You don't even have to have major anxiety or depression or something that is cataloged or diagnosed. Just come in when you feel like you want to talk to somebody and open yourself up to a person that's neutral, that they don't know you, and you learn about yourself by opening up. There's so many venues here on campus that you can do this sort of stuff. That's a very private, confidential one. But, you have your RHDs, you have your teachers, you have the various offices, such as the Dean of Students Office. And some people have special teachers in some of these departments. Some of them are wonderful to be able to talk about.
Our academic advisors are extraordinary.
You're telling me. Mm-hmm. And even Kate has made inroads over to the hospital with very talented nurses and sympathetic and empathetic to training and questions. And so many undergraduate students here on main campus are interested in going to the health sciences. And there are people over there you can talk to as well. It's in the school's best interest that, you know, you get your questions answered. And it's in your best interest as well. And, you know, we went from, and there's clubs that you can join, and there's organizations, like we said, there's the teams, and I think we're doing pretty good, and we're coming
Division
up to,
one, yeah.
Yeah, Division One. I mean, from going from Division Three to Division One and do as
so
well.
Because I came here, and it just, poof, we went from 3-1 in the time I'm here. I don't know how I did it, Jerry, but.
Yeah, I think you were at one of those real big games. I haven't been in the new stadium yet.
You're kidding?
Indoor stadium, no.
Oh, the basketball games. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the tickets are hard to come by now.
Oh, really?
But you and I remember the day when we could walk in, no tickets, bring 5 kids with us, have them have the run of the place because there were 20 people in the audience. So.
Yeah, that's another
those
way.
Those days are gone.
That's another way to de-stress. You know, go to one of Stony Brook's games.
Oh, please.
And the pep band will get you going.
Join the red zone. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, what's the red zone? Okay.
Well, in my world, the red zone is I join, well, I guess it's my way of being me without being recognized as me. But you can attend a game here at Stony Brook and be in the red zone. And what that means is you're pretty much painted red. Nobody on the planet would recognize. Gene Stein did recognize me once. And he was, the look of shock on his face will never leave me. But that said, it's a lot of fun. And you can root for your team and not worry about being judged or any of that social anxiety because you're wearing a uniform, a mask, and it's red. So
okay,
it's don't be looking for me because even at a game, you'll never figure out who I am.
We'll point Kate out. So
no, you won't.
You guys can go.
I'm the old lady with the red stuff on.
Steve is here with his show of music for the next couple of hours, and we're going to turn the mics over to him as soon as we get out of here. I guess he says to all these people, they won't leave. Okay, and in the meantime, take care of yourselves.
Take care.